So, Alan, I'm excited to have you on the Pro-Life Team podcast. Would you introduce yourself as if you were talking to a group of pregnancy clinic directors?
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So my name's Alan Aversa. I'm a graduate of the University of Arizona here in Tucson, or in Arizona. Lived in Arizona since 2004. And I'm running currently for public office in Congressional District 3 for U.S. House of Representatives as a pro-life candidate, as an independent, to promote the pro-life cause, especially that, you know, we are human beings from the moment of conception. So I'm very unapologetically pro-life from the very moment of conception with no exceptions. I mean, if it's an innocent human being, it deserves to be protected.
Yeah, so that's good.
At the University of Arizona, yeah, when I was there, I was actually the president of the Pro-Life Club at the U of A. I've been involved in a lot of pro-life activities.
Awesome. So what's been your experience running as a openly pro-life politician? What's that been like?
It's tough. It's tough to get votes. About 10 years ago, I ran in Iowa as an independent as well, and I only got about 4,000 votes, so it was less than a couple percent of the whole. But yeah, it's very tough to be, especially in the Democrat Party, essentially. You have to be pro-abortion. Even in the Republican Party, though, there's a lot of exceptions that you have to kind of, what about rape and incest and all that? And so it's hard to be a principled pro-life candidate in the political sphere. So, yeah, it's difficult.
So what are your, when you're, if you get elected, what's something that you might try and do that would reflect your pro-life values?
So I'm a very big promoter of the personhood amendment. I think there should be an amendment to the Constitution recognizing that we are human persons from the moment of conception. This follows from the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, which says that there are no protected classes or groups out there. Blacks, in the time leading up to the Civil War, they were recognized by the 14th Amendment as being just like any other group of people. And I think the same should be said about the unborn, too, that they're not a special class of human beings. They deserve the right to life, just like us born human beings deserve. Personhood Amendment is something that I would promote.
Yeah, that makes a lot. That's good. So when it comes to running, who's your candidates and what positions do they have on this topic or issue?
So in my district here, we have a pretty good pro-life candidate that runs for the GOP party. But the problem is in this district is only about 15% Republican. And so we have another candidate. I'm not really sure who's going to be picked for the Democrat side. Even though there is a good Republican candidate here, it's very difficult because there's only 15% Republican in this district. So that's one reason why I'm running as an independent, because I want to draw the votes away from the Democrats. And I'm actually running not to say, vote for me or anything, because I really don't think that I'm going to be elected. I'm running more to show, you shouldn't be voting for anybody that supports abortion and taking the rights of unborn children, their right to life away from them. So my campaign is primarily, don't vote for people who support abortion. I'm not really going out there saying, vote for me or so. I know the Republican candidate here. He's very good. He ran the last election cycle, but he got about a quarter of the vote, which is pretty good considering, there's not a quarter of Republicans in this district. I'm not running to compete against him or anything. I'm running more to draw votes away from, the independents that might eventually vote Democrat. And we got a lot of independents here. I think it's like 35 or 40% independent. So, you know, I'm going to try to convince them, you know, don't vote for this candidate that's supporting abortion. Vote for the one that, that supports unborn children's rights.
Okay. So what are your thoughts on Planned Parenthood and, you know, why it's being funded, or, you know, how the government is giving Planned Parenthood money, which as the, you know, number one abortion provider in the U.S. or in the world?
Yeah, and also, you know, they are in the schools too, which is, so I'm a teacher, so I'm, education is another topic that really interests me, and that's how they get their agenda in, by, you know, the sex ed programs that are put into the schools, and so yeah, Planned Parenthood started out promoting contraception, but they knew that that would lead to abortion, so they're, you know, they. Early on in Planned Parenthood's foundation in the 1920s and 30s, I think it was called the Birth Control League at that time, with Margaret Sanger. Margaret Sanger actually died in Tucson, interestingly. They have a memorial for her at Planned Parenthood in Tucson, which is really interesting. But they knew, you know, they knew that we can't promote abortion all just straight. People wouldn't accept that. The early feminists, Susan B. Anthony and the other ones, you know, they were all pro-life. And so they, so it was kind of a gradual thing. They started promoting contraception, and they knew when that fails, well, we'll have abortion as an option. And so that's how they started out in the United States. And then eventually, yeah, of course, they went all around the world. They're definitely the largest single abortion provider in the whole world. But yeah, so I don't think taxpayer money should be funding Planned Parenthood or anything like that. So
from a political viewpoint, what would it look like for Planned Parenthood funding to stop, or for Planned Parenthood to be, well, shut down or to end, to have Planned Parenthood ended? Because they get so much funds from the government, it's almost like they have unlimited funds at some levels because of the amount of money that they have obtained.
Yeah, and they say that they, you know, do have, that abortion isn't their primary business. They actually say that, but actually they make a big share of their profits off of abortion. I mean, I think we heard about the mammogram thing, you know, people, they say, well, they do mammograms. Well, they actually don't. You know, you call in and try to get one, they don't have that. And so, yeah, a lot of the time it's, but, oh, you're against women's health if you take funding away from Planned Parenthood, when really that's not true. There's definitely a lot of alternative. Crisis Pregnancy Center is very good alternatives for supporting the women through their whole pregnancies and giving them all the care they need, even afterwards, helping them find a job and things like that. So, in Arizona, there used to be, I think it was something like 8 or 12 Planned Parenthoods, and now I think we're only just down to a couple. So Arizona is an instance of, you know, what happens when you cut the funding to Planned Parenthood.
I was looking at the stats of a Planned Parenthood comparing the number of abortions they provided compared to the number of adoption referrals, and it was 200 to 1. So like 0.5% of the women that went into a Planned Parenthood got an adoption referral compared to, mm-hmm. yeah. So 199 that had an abortion, there was one that had a referral to an adoption agency.
Yeah.
That was the data from location.
Since the 1973 with Roe v. Wade, the adoption rate has just been plummeting. I have a cousin that placed her child into adoption, and she was a teenage pregnancy, but that was many years ago. I mean, that, I haven't heard of anybody to do that. So it is, adoption needs to be promoted more. Our previous governor Ducey here was very supportive of adoption. He had a lot of adoption programs put in place.
What are your thoughts about Trump, who's running for president in November? you know, what does that mean for when it comes to, you know, Trump and what he stands for when it comes to being pro-life? What does that sound like to you when it comes to policies that he might, you know, take action on or things that he might do? What are your thoughts on that?
He hasn't. I mean, he's been saying some strange things, like that comment where he said, "Oh, women don't know they're pregnant until, you know, after 8 weeks or something." And you know, he's made some kind of odd comments recently. But when he was president, and even before that, he said, "Yeah, we'll get some Supreme Court justices in there. We'll be able to overturn Roe v. Wade." And then that's actually what happened. I mean, so he you know, he saw that, but he hasn't been definitely hasn't talked about any sort of personhood amendment or anything like that. I mean, that would be a good thing. You know, I think the Republican Party needs to get back to, you know, President Lincoln. You know, Lincoln was a Republican. He was the one that abolished slavery. You know, we have something even worse than slavery today with, you know, what is it, a couple million babies per year in the United States are killed in their mother's wombs. I mean, so I think the Republican Party as a whole needs to kind of get back to this. We are living in a time very similar to, you know, what was leading up to the abolition of slavery, where there are different states. I think it's Missouri, it's completely outlawed, and then state right next to there, it's legal. So, you know, it was kind of very similar to what happened in the pre-Civil War United States. You know, some states were very opposed to slavery, some states were completely fine with it. And, you know, we have to come to a consensus as a nation, you know, about, you know, is this a human being or not? So I heard actually an interesting theory, you know, how the Dobbs case was leaked before they actually decided it. And somebody told me an interesting theory that he thinks that it was Justice Roberts that actually leaked it just to show what the reaction would be. Because some of the other justices, they did seem to be getting close to affirming, you know, we have to say, is this a human being or not? You know, we have to address that question in the court. And then I think it's probably Roberts who said, you know, no, we can't go that far. You know, look what would happen. And then he leaked it just to show, you know, what backlash was going to be just by leaking that. But, you know, they might have actually thought that there would a sort of civil war would break out. So they took kind of not as they didn't go as far as they could, I think, with the Dobbs decision. It's not that the Dobbs decision was bad. I mean, I think that was a great victory for the pro-life movement. But, you know, the fight's not over now that Roe v. Wade's overturned.
Yeah. Speaking of the fight not being over, and also speaking of, like, you know, one state next to another. So, like, Texas, yeah, you know, abortion is illegal, while New Mexico abortion is, well, so legal that people travel there to have one done, or, you know, or California, for example, it's very legal. So in some states it's, yeah, been abolished or it's banned, it's illegal. And then the neighboring states are saying things like, well, come here, travel here and have your abortion here. What are your thoughts about one state promoting, you know, drawing in citizens from a neighboring state in order to take advantage of liberal laws, or, you know, abortion up to the point of birth, or abortion being legal while the state that they're living in says it's illegal and they, you know, they can't, it can't take place there, surgically at least, or legally at least.
Yeah. I know that, that some states, there are some states that even make it illegal just to leave the state to go to another state. That's a tricky issue. I mean, that's why there has to be something at the federal level, settling this, because that's kind of the purpose of the federal government, to deal with, you know, the commerce between the states, you know, like what's happening between the states. But yeah, I know that, and there certainly should be, penalties against companies who support, you know, who pay for their employees to go to other states and to do that. So yeah, I mean, you know, a lot of people in the pro-life movement say, oh, you know, You know, well, what is the goal of the pro-life movement? That's another interesting question. It should be to make abortion illegal. And not all pro-lifers say that. They say, oh, we should just, you know, make it unthinkable, or we should, you know, educate people about alternatives. I mean, well, that's a good thing. I mean, I think that the goal is to make it illegal. No, just because, like, murder or theft, you know, there are laws against that, right? People will be breaking the laws no matter what. I mean, people hold slaves even today, you know, even though that's illegal, right? So people still break laws, but that's not a good argument for there not being a law. I think there needs to be a law that, you know, that says we cannot do that. You cannot do that. It's homicide to kill an unborn innocent human being. That needs to be very clear. So yeah, I think in the pro-life movement, people could, you know, a lot of people tend to shy away from the political aspect of it, but I mean, that's important. I mean, I think that's the ultimate goal, is to make it illegal, because the law teaches people, you know, if somebody thinks, oh, you know, it's illegal to go steal my neighbor's car, you know, that will deter him from doing that. I mean, most citizens are law abiding citizens. But, you know, when we say it's legal, and then somebody might be wondering, you know, should I do this or not? The, you know, boyfriend might be pressuring the girlfriend into this, and, you know, there are all these things. But if the law is there to help direct and guide them, you know, that'll help a lot. You know, I think so the law is very important. The law needs to be changed. I mean, it's a good step that, you know, the states are, you know, that this is up to the states now, but, you know, I think there will be a point where the federal government will have to come in and settle this. So
for 50 years, you know, based on the Supreme Court ruling Roe versus Wade, abortion was forced to be legal across the country. And now we have some states where it's legal and some states where it's not legal. And we have women who, we have women who live in Texas, and those women under Roe, you know, if they, having an abortion was legal, meaning the moral compass of the law wasn't saying don't have an abortion. There may have been other moral compasses that would have said, don't do it. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's good or right. But, you know, here now we have women who lived under Roe, and they may have had an abortion, and now with the law changing, where does that leave them when it comes to their moral compass being changed, or when it comes to the, you know, measuring right and wrong, or having to deal with, you know, now it's considered murder, or now it's considered killing, whereas before it was considered a woman's right, or, you know, different manipulative language. So what are your thoughts on, mm-hmm. A person having that, you know, that backstory with the law changing, and now having to grapple with their life story, and having the pain and suffering of, being under Roe and now being under Dobbs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. I mean, it's something that we all have to kind of face. You know, how as a country could have we considered it, you know, just, like women's rights, but now, you know, it's something completely opposite. It's interesting. Something I wanted to bring up, I know you had those points that you wanted me to discuss, was when I was 5 years old, my mom had an ectopic pregnancy, so I would have had a sibling. I'm an only child. I would have had a sibling, but, you know, she had to have this operation that, you know, resulted in the death of the child. You know, I wouldn't say she had an abortion. It wasn't a direct intentional killing of the child. I mean, the doctor was trying to treat all the internal bleeding that she had and all these issues. You know, it's interesting that I've met people in the pro-life movement who say, or in the, you know, in the pro-abortion movement that say, oh, you know, oh, your mother got an abortion. And I'm like, no, I wouldn't call that an abortion. But, you know, I think the people that realize, I had a friend I think it was in the store or something, or he was in a coffee shop and he was talking about this. And, you know, he was just, some lady at the other table just overheard him say something like, you know, abortion kills an innocent human being. Or, and the lady came up to him and thanked him and said, you know, I want to thank you for, you know, for speaking the truth there. You know, I had an abortion. And you know, I knew that that's what I was doing. I was taking the life away from an innocent human being. And you know, it helped her to get over, to face that reality. And so she, interesting, you know, she thanked this pro-lifer for speaking the truth about that. I've volunteered a lot with, Center for Bioethical Reform and Justice for All, and they use graphic images, to, you know, showing actual abortion video. I mean, these images were certified by abortionists to be, you know, legitimate, valid pictures of, you know, what happens. And you know, there's a division in the pro-life movement, I think, about the usage of graphic images, but for, you know, if it can save one life alone, that's good. And there is testimony, women come back and say, you know, I didn't like seeing that. I didn't like, you know, it was terrible to see, but, you know, I had an abortion scheduled that day and I decided not to do that because I saw that picture. You know, so, you know, we want to show what abortion is and the truth of what it is. Not because we want to scare people or because we like looking at those pictures, but because, you know, the reality behind those pictures is something that we have to face. Now, the United States, like, I mean, this is actually how the slavery was abolished too. The same thing. People took pictures of the horrible treatment of the, you know, the scars that the slaves would get on their backs from being whipped, and that really spurred the movement to abolition. And so we're doing the same thing in the pro-life movement, you know, helping people face, you know, what is abortion. I mean, I think a lot of women, they realize, yeah, that there's a life growing in them, but you know, the abortion facilities and nurses, you know, they want to dehumanize it and say, oh, it's just a product of conception, or, you know, it's just a cell, or it's, you know, but you know, we have all those statistics about the ultrasounds. It's something like at least 3/4, I think, of women who see, you know, the ultrasound of their baby will decide to continue with the pregnancy, or if they hear the heartbeat, you know, they realize, you know, that there's another life inside of me. Yeah.
I think a lot of that is when it comes to dispelling the false beliefs that have been used to manipulate women into thinking it's not a child, it's not a baby, it's not a person, it's something that might, you know, they equate to like a tooth being extracted, which is vastly different than a person. The opposition has made it into like, you know, into like a machine of lying, or into a machine of pushing false beliefs. And
yeah, even very early on, I don't know if you ever saw the Roe v. Wade movie that came out in 2020, I think it was. You know, it was a very good kind of portrayal of, you know, what led up to Roe v. Wade. And one good point it made in that movie was that the back alley abortion statistics, those were just invented out of thin air. I mean, even I think it was Bernard Nathanson himself said that, yeah, we just came up with those statistics out of thin air. So yeah, it's been a lot of lies, covering up, especially all the great embryology videos and photographs that have been taken, you know, the past century or so. There's just so much more scientific evidence now that, you know, this is a human being. I mean, think about it, DNA wasn't even discovered until the late, or until the mid, like 19th century or mid 20th century. But now, you know, we have so much more evidence, and a lot of that evidence was actually, none of that evidence was brought into into the Roe v. Wade case. I think the most recent embryology that they discussed when they went over the history of embryology was something like, you know, middle age embryology. But, you know, look at Da Vinci, even Da Vinci's really good drawings of the unborn. And, And then there was a, I forget what the, I think it was Davenport Hooker was another, you know, he made these really good photographs of the unborn. And there was also a physician to the Queen of England many years ago that did just amazing drawings. Like, I mean, they look like photographs, these drawings that that he did of the unborn. And all that evidence, you know, was neglected at, you know, in the Roe v. Wade documentation. So, we have, I mean, especially now with the 4D ultrasounds, like it's undeniable that, you know, this is a human being.
So with your position being, pro-life, making you closer to the Republican candidate. Yeah. So how does that work when it comes to, you know, not taking votes from the, you know, the person, you know, I guess, you know, the friendly pro-life candidate, and then trying to take votes from the one who is pro-abortion? Is it, you know, so essentially, it sounds like maybe you're talking about maybe trying to just encourage people to vote pro-life. It seems like a lot of work to run if you don't have the expectation of winning. Like, I don't quite understand how that plays out.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest support base is the pro-life movement here. So,
When Ross Perot ran, like, he took votes from the Republican side, I think a lot more than the Democrat side, and, you know, as an independent, he ended up, I think, pulling from the Republican side more so than the Democrat side. Go ahead and share. What are your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I think we do need to make it so that it's not just two parties. I mean, I think we need to have some more options. In Arizona here, it's actually, some states are very easy to be independents. In Arizona, it's not very easy to be an independent. You have to have 3% of, you know, you have to, for signatures, you need basically like three times as many signatures as a party candidate. And like, if you were to run for a statewide position here in Arizona, you need something like 42,000 signatures, which is, it's unbelievable. Some states, to run as an independent, as a statewide candidate, you basically pay them a couple hundred dollars, or you only need a couple hundred signatures. And so there's a whole variety, whole gamut regarding independence and how friendly the states are to independence. But yeah, Arizona's not very friendly to independence. So
interesting. So what's something that you would like to, you know, for pregnancy clinics here in Arizona or abroad, what's something that you would like to say to the leadership or the executive directors that may be encouraging or helpful to know?
Yeah, I would say, you know, just keep doing what you're doing, especially going out to the abortion facilities, being sidewalk counselors. I know one here in Arizona. I mean, she's just a real warrior. She's been out there since basically Roe v. Wade. Especially on Saturdays when there's just, you know, tons of very aggressive, you know, shoving the flyers in their faces, talking to the boyfriends, telling the boyfriends, you know, don't make your girlfriend go through this, you know, be a man, help her out. You know, we have pregnancy, I'll drive you myself to the pregnancy. And that's very effective. I mean, those sidewalk counselors. So that's what I would say, I think, to the leaders of the crisis pregnancy centers, get more sidewalk counselors out there, because, you know, that's how, you know, that's how you'll save more babies, for sure. So,
yeah, that's good. Based on your experience volunteering and working in doing pro-life work, you know, or being a pro-life candidate, where have you seen God's fingerprints in this work, or where have you seen answered prayer or something along those lines?
That's interesting, because I've never been directly involved with an abortion, or really, I don't know any family members who had them. At least they've never told me they did. And so, you know, why am I interested in this movement? That's kind of, I think God was, you know, planting something in my conscience to tell me, you know, that, you know, when I saw the statistics about, you know, what's going on, I'm a real math and science person, so I love data and statistics. And when I saw that, I'm like, wow, this is unbelievable how common this is. And that's kind of what spurred me into the movement. God just working in my conscience, I think, just telling me, you have to do something about this. Like, you know, so, yeah.
Let's say you're able to pull votes from the pro-abortion Democrat and the pro-life Republican wins by a margin, maybe a tight margin here in Arizona. Where does that leave you? Like, is your goal maybe to try and join that cabinet or that team, or where do you go after that? Like, if what you're trying to do is successful, what do you do next?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've been involved with the Republican Party here in South Mountain area. That's kind of what got me into the politics in this area. We'll see. I mean, I definitely want to help support any of the amendments, maybe to the Arizona Constitution, personhood amendments. I think that's what really should be pushed more. There's I don't know if you've heard of the Arizona, what do they call it? The Abortion Access Amendment. I mean, they're basically trying to put the supposed right to abortion in the Arizona Constitution. They need something like 350,000 signatures. And I think they're getting pretty close to that. But you know, what I'm seeing on the Republican side is mostly just, don't sign that, don't do, but I think we need to do something, positive too, support the personhood amendment or things like that. So yeah, so that's the way I see it.
So when did you first hear about the personhood amendment? Like, what's the backstory gaining understanding about that?
Yeah, it was actually somebody outside the abortion facility here in Phoenix that he's very supporting that amendment. And I thought, well, that's an interesting idea. And I looked at it, read more about the history of the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment starts out by saying, all people born or naturalized. And, so you think it's only talking about born people, but he was arguing, even unborn people are covered by the 14th Amendment. And so I think that's a really good goal, because if the law recognizes the unborn as citizens, as people deserving of rights, we have something like, it's in a statistic I read just today, the National Right to Life put an article together about all the states that, when you have a mother, when you have a double homicide case of a mother, pregnant lady being killed, whether the state also considers it, two murders or one, and something like at least 30 states in the United States would consider it two murders, which is interesting. But there's not a consistency, if the child's unwanted, then you can take its life away. If the mother is killed, then the state considers it a person. So there needs to be some consistency in the law regarding personhood. So that's where I first heard about that.
That makes sense. What's one of the numbers when you said you were looking at the data and you were shocked at how common abortion was, and it really sort of pulled you into this work? What's one of the numbers that really stood out to you that spoke to you?
The 1.2 million per year in the United States. And then I think in Arizona, it was something, it came out to be 15,000 or something. And I thought, wow, that's a lot. Those are the numbers that really struck me. And another thing I never understood is that, most abortions occur in the first trimester, very young. And the cases are, almost none of those cases have to do with a medical sort of situation where the mother has some condition that where the pregnancy is making her condition a little bit more difficult. The situations of rape and incest are very small fraction of all the abortions that occur. So it made me think, why are so many occurring perfectly healthy mothers and, you know, in pretty good situations economically and everything. Why is this happening? So, yeah, that was something that really opened my eyes, I think, the statistics about that. So.
What about separation of church and state? You know, so the church not, you know, the state not saying, you know, this is the religion to choose, like, you know, having separation there, while also, you know, saying that abortion is wrong because it ends the life. Like, how do you maintain separation from religion? Because I know for myself, I look at abortion being wrong because it destroys an image bearer of God. And so my religion is deeply weaved into my reasons why it's wrong. But at the state level, I believe it's because, you know, from biological reasons, or, you know, because of the reasons that it's wrong to end the life of someone else or to infringe on the rights by ending their life of someone else. You know, how do you draw the distinguishment of abortion being wrong without, while still maintaining separation of church and state?
Yeah, I mean, I've actually known some pro-life atheists too, and a lot of the religions, you know, Orthodox Jews, even some Muslims, and, you know, a lot of the different Christian denominations, you know, they have an agreement about when this, you know, about abortion. But yeah, I mean, I do get that sometimes people say, oh, you're just trying to impose your religious views on me by being against abortion. But I think it's built into our human nature that, you know, killing an innocent human being is wrong. That's something all people throughout all ages could understand. Even, you know, a tribe way out in Australia, Aborigine tribe or something, even they could understand, you know, that murder is wrong, you know, killing an unborn innocent human being is wrong. So I think it can be argued, you know, just from a natural law perspective, you know, that law that's written into our nature, that and that's another thing, you know, the law, there is morality. You can't separate morality from the law. I know a lot of people try to say that too. Oh, you're trying to impose your morality on, you know, what the law is. But the purpose of law is, yeah, you can't separate that. Now, why do we have laws against murder or against theft, or, you know, because it's wrong to steal what belongs to somebody else. It's wrong to take the life away from somebody who's not a convicted person, you know, an innocent person now people understand, like, oh, you know, an innocent person on death row, you know, that's bad. But what about an innocent person in the womb, you know, that they haven't committed any crime? You know, why should their life be taken away? So that's how I argue. I mean, it's not that my religious views certainly agree with, you know, with this, but it's not like I'm imposing, you know, it's not like I think, oh, and I'm just imposing my views and you can do it. Now, we live in this climate of kind of relativism, like, oh, you know, what's okay for you to do might not be okay for me to do. But that's not true. I mean, we all share the same human nature. It can all be shown, you know, for all of us. It's not, you know, committing adultery is wrong, killing is wrong, stealing is wrong. You know, for all of us that applies.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, because on death row, yeah, there probably has been a percent of innocent people who were killed based on being framed. It'd be, you know, probably a small percent, I hope. Yeah. But when it comes to the unborn, not one child who was aborted had ever hurt anybody else. Like, it wasn't like they didn't have the opportunity to do an infraction or to hurt someone else. Mm-hmm. And so every child that was aborted was innocent, and killed. And so that's interesting to think about it that way. I didn't really compare the innocent level, or the percent of innocence of those who've been aborted compared to those on death row, perhaps.
Yeah, with an unborn, I mean, there are some people that try to argue that the unborn in certain situations could be like an unjust aggressor. But, you know, they don't have the ability to choose to, you know, oh, I'm going to try to, you know, kill this person. That's what, you know, they don't have that intention as an unborn innocent child. So they can't be convicted as being an unjust aggressor toward the mother or something.
You know, so what are your thoughts about false beliefs? Like when it comes to, there seems to be a lot, like a never ending level set of false beliefs that promote abortion as being good or trying to justify abortion or make it, you know, like, you know, for example, the false belief of my body, my choice, while a woman, you know, in reality doesn't have more than 10 fingers and 10 toes. Yeah,
I mean, I agree with my body, my choice. We have autonomy over our own bodies, right?
Yeah.
You know, that, if you don't believe that, then yeah, then you know.
But how does she have more than? But when she's pregnant, she's got more than one body. You know, because she has a body inside her body, which is not her body.
Yeah. So when you know, when there's another person involved, and and you know, your rights. The mother's rights can never trump the child's rights. The doctor's, and this is something you probably know about the Hippocratic Oath, how it was changed in the 60s, I think it was.
I think as a result of Roe versus Wade, because it talked about not ending the life. And and so it was changed as a result of Roe versus Wade being passed.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the mentality should be, you know, we're trying to save the child and the mother. You know, our medical system, you know, purports to be so good and everything. So, I mean, so it should be able to do that. I mean, it's not like we're asking too much of the medical technology or doctors to be able to save both of their lives. But yeah, I say, you know, I agree with choice. We have the ability to choose, but when that infringes upon the rights of somebody else, well, you know, then that's a different situation.
So what would be your encouragement for people across the country when it comes to, you know, voting pro-life or running themselves as a pro-life candidate, whether it be for the school board or for these different positions beyond that? What would be your encouragement to people, when it comes to voting pro-life or running as a pro-life candidate?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned school board. I mean, those people are really heroic what they're doing, you know, trying to oppose all the, like, the critical race theory and transgender ideologies that are coming into the schools. So, yeah, I mean, I would say that's very important. Yeah, attend those school board meetings. Make your voice known. Make sure that, you know, the children are being taught, you know, real, you know, like embryonic development. And that was actually in Tucson. I knew somebody that ran a crisis pregnancy center down there. And he was trying to get just this very simple children's book into the curriculum at the school there. But they were very opposed to it because, it showed the embryology and the development of the unborn. You know, it showed really the humanity of the unborn human being. And so, yeah, I mean, that's where the fight really is. I think with education, especially, you know, teaching the children, you know, what does, I mean, this could be done in science classes, teaching what the embryonic development looks like. And it's interesting, you know, all these supposedly comprehensive sex ed programs don't discuss embryonic development at all. You know, they're mostly about, you know, how to prevent disease and all these things. So be in those school board meetings. Make sure that the schools are being open about, you know, what their curriculum is. And that was actually a really good blessing from, you know, the whole COVID shutdown. Parents finally saw, you know, what was actually being taught in the classrooms. And, you know, it wasn't what they thought was being taught. That would be regarding education. Yeah, I think that's a very important aspect of the pro-life movement. When it comes to political candidates for mayor or city or state, the local candidates are actually more important. You know, it's interesting I say that because, you know, I'm running as a federal candidate, but the school board, the state representative, your state senators, mayors. You know, this is the local level is where you need to start the fight. You know, meet up with your, GOP groups or any other political groups in your area, and make friends with the people in your area, and they'll give you a lot of encouragement. And we have already some very good pro-life politicians currently in Arizona, like Tom Horn, the education secretary. He used to be many years, about a decade ago, I think he was the attorney general, and he was very pro-life attorney general. And we have Kimberly Yee as the state treasurer, another very pro-life candidate. She's from Tucson. Meet up, make connections with these people. And there's a lot of good right to life groups in the Phoenix area and in Tucson or wherever else you may live. Make friends, make connections with the people in the movement. I mentioned, meeting people outside the abortion facility here. Well, that was a part of the 40 Days for Life movement. And they do a lot of really good work. They have, different locations where you have a schedule and you'll be out there for an hour, praying outside the abortion facility, just maybe holding a sign, or, just your presence there is really good for deterring people. One time when I was out there, I saw a girl with her friend drive in. They saw our sign and they just did a U-turn like right away. So we're like, wow, they looked at it shocked because they didn't know, really what they were getting into. They're just told, oh, it's a gynecologist, you can go here. Just your presence outside the abortion facilities too. 40 Days for Life, if you're worried about, what if I get arrested or what's going to happen? There's a lot of support with the different leaders in 40 Days for Life to help you with that. So, yeah.
Alan, what would be your encouragement for current political leadership when it comes to really understanding what is happening in the pro-life movement as well as what's happening at an abortion clinic? Like, what would you encourage, whether they, regardless of their position, what would you encourage them to do or to understand when it comes to this issue?
Yeah, that's, read up, I think, more about, how it actually works, a lot of people, even on the, the pro-abortion side, a lot of them, I don't think, really know what an abortion is. I mean, they say it's a medical procedure. I think they could be educated a little bit more about, these statistics, especially, how vast majority of them are not done for medical reasons, especially that. And even on the pro-life politician side, a lot of them aren't really pro-life from, they're just pro-life more because it's something they have to say just to, they don't really understand. I think like if a pro-life candidate says, I'm pro-life except for rape, incest and all that, they haven't understood really why they need to be pro-life. I mean, I think that, I think, read more about it. And there's a lot of excellent books and videos, and the technology today, like I've said, is just amazing for showing the humanity of the unborn.
When it comes to someone who's when it comes to someone who's pro-life in 99.5% or maybe 99.9%, but they leave that rape and incest exception and saying, I'm pro-life in all situations except rape and incest. What would you say to that group as a reason to consider life for those who are being created out of a hard situation like rape and incest, or a terrible situation like rape and incest?
Yeah, I mean, it's It's, yeah, that is a terrible thing. I mean, it's a violent act to be raped. I mean, and that's not something that, now, like if I were a woman, yeah, that would be terrible to go through. And so we're not condemning, you know, the woman because she happened to be raped. But, you know, on the other hand, you know, I think you've got this life that's living in you. I think, what I would say is that there are women who have decided, you know, cases of rape that have gone through the pregnancy, and they don't regret it for one bit that they did have that child and keep that child. And on the other hand, you know, women who have abortions are, you know, much more likely to commit suicide, have, you know, psychological effects of it, you know, like post-traumatic stress syndrome sort of effects. And so, you know, I wouldn't want to compound the terrible suffering that they went through from being raped with, you know, even more, you know, side effects of going through an abortion. And then of course, you know, the child has no say in who his parents are, and you know, like, so the child's again completely innocent in that situation too. So
I would say, yeah, for the woman who's gone through a terrible situation, you know, getting you know, having a opportunity for counseling, for healing, for help, and going through with that pregnancy as part of that journey towards not having compound trauma or trauma times two, but rather, you know, dealing with the really, you know, the trauma of the hard situation, the terrible situation. And one of the gentlemen who's a pro-life speaker, his name is Stephen Thin, which is a very unique name. It's his first name. And his mom was raped, and his life, you know, who he is, his story, it to me is like a symbol for saying that, you know, people that come out of these very difficult beginnings have incredible value. Not just, you know, their lives are just as important as anyone else's life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's hard.
Yeah, I've
it's
known
hard.
People with Down syndrome too. I had a classmate when I was a fourth grader that I pretty good. I mean, so I, and he was just a joy. I mean, I really liked him. But yeah, that's another tragedy now that, you know, but they're able to do that test before for Down syndrome. Now there's not as many Down syndrome people because they're.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that when it comes to, like,
who is it to say that? You know, who is it to say, who am I to say that my Down syndrome friend, you know, had a terrible life, you know, he shouldn't have existed, or, you know, I don't think that at all.
It seems to me like it's mostly based on, you know, someone being an inconvenience to the person making the decision, more so than it really being for the benefit of the person who's being aborted. It's not like people are not being aborted because it's for their benefit. It seems like it's more likely it's the benefit of the person making the decision. So if someone has Down syndrome, I feel like people are looking at them as being a problem for someone else. Whereas in reality, their life is just as valuable as my life or your life. And so legally, like, to me, that feels like that's treating them as a people group that's being, destroyed. So, you know, what are your thoughts on that from, like, a political or a government level, you know, having certain people exterminated because of the hardship they may have on someone else? You know,
that's against the Constitution. It's against the 14th Amendment. Like, so, you know, it's already unconstitutional to exclude or, you know, try to get rid of certain groups of people. I think that's what we need to focus it back on. You know, we're excluding the unborn. We're excluding, in Arizona here, we have laws against that, which is good. Some states do have laws against sex selective abortion or, you know, like disability selected abortion, which is good. I mean, I think that's a good step, but you know, we need to again have that sort of personhood amendment to you know, say that these people, even before they're born, you know, they have a right not to be excluded as a, you know, as a separate class of people. Or up in, somebody told me, I don't know if it was up in the Phoenix area or where it was, but there's this this cafe that's run entirely by Down syndrome people, and people like it. I mean, it's they do this really neat cafe. So it's not like, I mean, they have value to society for sure. So
yeah. Well, so Alan, as part of these podcasts, I often will ask the guest to wrap up the podcast with a prayer. Would you feel comfortable doing that in this podcast?
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. And maybe just include, you know, something that, yeah, I would ask you to pray for something that reflects your desire for pro-life candidates to be elected and for pro-life laws to be passed and to be enforced, especially for those who are, for pro-life laws that are on the books, protecting those with Down syndrome, protecting those who are deemed less than desirable. I think those, everyone needs protection, and including those who are being attacked.
Yeah. All right. Let's pray in the name of the Father and of the Son, the Holy Spirit. Amen. O Lord, you are the God of life. You are the living God. Change the hearts of all those who are seeking to, to get rid of any inconvenience they might think they have. Whether that be in their own child or a relative, or this we didn't mention, but even the elderly too have value. It's not just the unborn that the pro-life movement should think about. Change the hearts, especially of the abortionists. I think they have been really deceived into thinking that they are helping the women. And you know, they can convert too. We've seen many conversions of them. And Lord, you are all powerful. Really, it's going to be up to your will to end this this holocaust of the unborn that we've been living through. We're just your instruments, but you know, you could change this with just a snap of your finger. I mean, you're the all-powerful God. And help us to thank you for life, that it's the greatest gift. You know, without life, we wouldn't have any other rights. And to change our minds and hearts regarding children, and help us to promote this culture of life that that we can become a nation again. You know, nation comes from the word natio, which means birth, you know, so that we can have some more generations to build up our country and make it a great country. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
And know that I am. has the alibi of the broken, the wish inside the earth. The chorus of our questions, all creatures of the earth, be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God. Broken sob at the graveside, the wedding bells at noon, the sounds of the lost and found, the reaching of our hands, the whale and the lion, the mother and her son, the family of terra firma, creatures of the earth. And know that I am God. Be still and know that I am God.